First up, we've got Lynette Silver, who's going to be calling at the School of Mechanics and Arts in Pitt Street, Sydney, tomorrow to discuss the unmasking of the real James Bond. Lynette, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, brilliant. Now, look, James Bond, everyone loves James Bond. I think there's a movie out every year almost, isn't there? And, of course, Ian Fleming wrote all these stories about James Bond. What's your theory about what's happened? Who was the real James Bond?
Well, I'm a military historian, and right back in 1996, I had contact with an elderly Englishman who was living down in England, in Canberra, and I was discussing various aspects of the fall of Singapore with him, and in my discussions realised, because of the people he'd worked with and because the research work I'd done, undertaken over a lot of years, that he was definitely connected to MI6.
Yeah.
Now, he was a bit reticent on the phone, but he agreed to meet me in Sydney, and the meeting took place on Central Railway Station on a really cold winter's day when he came off the train, and we had a discussion at a little nearby cafe, and during that discussion I realised he was definitely mixed up as a spy the war, during the war, and after the war.
Oh, and was there a fog when he got off the train?
Oh, yes. And because I knew that he had been a spy, for a bit of a joke for myself, I'd actually worn a trench coat.
Oh.
And then I realised it wasn't such a joke after all, that he was, you know, this person who had been a career spy for the Secret Intelligence Service. Now, I got to know him quite well. And he died not long afterwards, but he was, you know, had all his marbles, very intelligent man. And I got to meet his son, whom I knew very well. And over the years, I've talked to Derek, his son, about his father. And one day, Derek sent me some papers that belonged to his dad. And I was going through them, and I suddenly stopped short, and I saw in front of me what I knew was a Secret Service number, starting with the initials BB, which stands for British Bureau. I rang Derek up and I said, oh, did you realise your father's Secret Service number's embedded in these papers? He said, no. I said, well, they are. BB stands for British Bureau. And the funny part about this, I said, this is really funny, the rest of the number is 007, same as James Bond.
Oh, that number.
And Derek then dropped the bombshell and said, well, Dad was very good friends with Ian Fleming, you know.
Wow.
Now, it turned out that Derek Emerson Elliott, and that's not his real name, that is the name that MI6 gave him, but it's the name he has, started off before the war doing sort of, obviously, low-level spying in Malaya. When the war broke out, he was put into naval intelligence in Australia and became the personal assistant to the head of naval intelligence, who was, in fact, MI6's man in Australia. So now we've got this pattern developing. The people he worked with in Malaya and after the war, we're all MI6 people. And so we then started to explore a bit further, and Derek was able to tell me that during the war, Ian Fleming, who very strangely, according to some people, was given the post of assistant to the Director of Naval Intelligence there, the same job that Dennis had here in Australia, that these two had corresponded throughout the whole war, very close contact, and had also trained together before the war in Scotland for MI6. After the war, Derek went across there with his father and he met Ian Fleming, who hadn't written the James Bond books there, and also they stayed in a fabulous house. They lived in England for a while that was owned by a fellow called Admiral Drax, who was very high in intelligence. And
He sounds like some sort of a spook, doesn't he?
Yes, and Ian Fleming cheekily used the name Drax as one of the baddies in Moonraker.
That's why I thought, you know, yeah.
He had a bit
sounds
of a,
familiar.
He had a bit of a sense of humour. And Derek remembers going off to the races with Ian Fleming. He thought it was quite a nice chap, but apparently, according to a miniseries recently, he wasn't quite as nice as some people thought he was. And he then had this close association. So we then had a good look at Derek's father, Dennis, and realised that he had many of the attributes which James Bond has. Now, all Ian Fleming would ever say was that he had modelled James Bond on people he had worked with in intelligence during the war, naval intelligence during the war. So we looked at Dennis and he ticked a lot of boxes. First of all, he was a very close friend of Ian Fleming. Secondly, he and Ian Fleming had the same jobs throughout the whole of the war and contact with each other constantly. worked together before and after. Dennis loved fast cars. He had really racy little Elvis, duck-tailed Elvis, bright blue when he was in Malaya. Always loved fast cars. Was very irresistible to women. He was the most charismatic man I've ever met in my life, and he was about 89 when I met him.
Wow, yes. Still irresistible at 89.
Oh, yes, very.
Gee, I hope I'm doing that well, you know.
I hope you are too. Very, very charming. He was a known womaniser before he married the love of his life, who was just out of school. And the reality was that from then on, she was the love of his life until she died at quite young age. So we were ticking boxes madly, and, of course, we got down to the last bit. You know, worked for MI6, Naval Intelligence, Noonan and Fleming. The rank that Dennis had during the war was the same as that of James Bond, but, of course, the clincher was the fact that his Secret Service number was 007. So that's why I believe that this interesting man that I met is in fact the primary role that Ian Fleming used to create James Bond.
That is amazing. What a discovery. It's so exciting.
Well, it was even more exciting when I discovered that Ian Fleming had drawn, he apparently was a reasonable artist, he had drawn an image, just in pen and ink, of how he imagined that James Bond would look.
Right.
And when you look at that image and you put it against a photograph taken of his friend, Dennis Emerson Elliott, at Naval Intelligence during the war, the resemblance is absolutely uncanny.
Wow.
And tomorrow when I do this talk, I'll be showing people these two images and they can judge for themselves. But I wish that I had known more about this when Dennis was still alive, but I doubt that he would have come. He was very evasive. I suppose it was from years of being a spook. You know, they don't sort of give away a lot of information. He gave me enough information for me to know what he was doing, but I don't know whether he would have exactly answered a really direct question.
Yeah, probably wouldn't, actually. Interestingly, I had a friend of my family in England was in the Navy during the war. And I remember, and I was talking to her when I was, this is many years ago, when I was on a trip over there. And she's a very intelligent woman. She'd been to all these places. She spoke something like 15 languages. You know, and then I said, now, look, in the war, where were you based? And she told me this place, which was right in the middle of the country, you know. I don't think it was that far from the Bletchley Park place, actually. And I said to her, that's not near any ports. Wouldn't you be near ports? And then she goes, no. And I said, how do you learn all these languages? Oh, I just learned them. And then I said, you weren't in the regular Navy, were you? And she looked at me and she says, I'm not answering that question. And I thought, my goodness, this woman who was about 80 at the time, I'm thinking, she was a spook too.
Yes, well, the Navy...
But they won't say anything, of course.
No, the Navy was often used as a cover. I mean, if people who know a bit about history will know that the best spies, or the first spies, started off with Elizabeth I reign, and they were the Navy.
Yeah.
They were carrying the messages. And a lot of people who were working undercover here in Australia were all given commissions in the Royal Australian Navy, and that was their sort of their cover that protected them, especially if they were caught. Because if you have, if you're in services, well, you're probably still going to get executed if you're caught, but you've got a better chance of staying alive if you're a military person. But you're talking about your friend with the languages. Dennis spoke fluent Cantonese, which was very handy when he infiltrated the Communist Party in Malaya after the war, because there was a big uprising there after the war, and he became a double agent for the British with the Communist Party. And
yes, because that was the big insurgence, wasn't it? The communism was coming down from the north, yeah.
And he took his family into the heart of the communist stronghold, and Derek's got some wild stories to tell of of living next door to a Chinese communist stronghold who were in a beautiful house, and they were in the house next door. And while the kids are playing in the yard at their place, the communists were bumping off what they call running dogs and burying the bodies in the rose garden.